And now Joan Lewis, our resident Vatican expert, told me a bit about an extraordinary pilgrimage she made recently to Turkey in the footsteps of St. Paul. I asked her if it helped bring the apostle closer to her, especially in this year dedicated to him.
Oh, totally. I am so in awe of the man, and I'll tell you why walking in his footsteps made him come alive and others in the early first century of our faith. Because those footsteps took us up hills and down hills and in rainstorms and in gullies and in caves. The first 2 days, we spent most of our time outside, for example, visiting the ruins at Ephesus near Mary's house. We were in Hierapolis. We were in Antioch of Pisidia in the Anatolia region, Cappadocia. There's 400 cave churches, most of which have immensely beautiful frescoes. I mean, I'm putting the pictures on my blog, Joan's Rome, and they're truly phenomenal.
I've always loved the idea of being able to go to Cappadocia. I've never been there myself, but these incredible cuneiform the
buildings,
caves and buildings.
Homes that were created by nature. They were created by rain from the tufa, the soil there, created by rain, and they look like giant thumbs protruding out of the land. And then some of them have what they call fairy chimneys on the top. They're these very delicate stones that only the Lord knows how they remained balanced.
For centuries. There's one of the oldest Christian communities ever.
Exactly. The physical terrain is so demanding. So the idea of picturing St. Paul in his journeys, I have learned he traveled in his three journeys. His fourth one really was the final one where he left what is modern-day Turkey and went to Rome where he died. And he traveled 7,800 miles by foot and 9,000 miles by ship on his various trips. So, I mean, he went back and forth to Rome. He did what is modern-day Greece, Macedonia, Turkey. A huge amount of what he did was in Turkey. So to read a letter of St. Paul, to see the name Antioch, to see Ephesus, to see Iconium, which is modern-day Konya in the Cappadocia region, to actually visit these places is phenomenal. But the physical rigors that we had to go through, if we wanted to see these caves, my dear, we had to do some huge amounts of climbing.
But it's, you know, we have to stop a second and remind ourselves that Paul himself was from Tarsus, which is in southern Turkey.
Right.
So you said that among the places that you saw was Mother Mary's house. How is that? Mary lived
in
Turkey
for a long time?
We started
our journey, actually, in the southwestern, if you will, section of modern-day Turkey. Izmir, which is the third largest city after Ankara and Istanbul in Turkey. You know, we flew from Istanbul to Izmir, and then we took a bus to a resort town, actually a cruise ship town. There weren't any there in February, but called Kuşadası. And then we drove to Mary's house, which is at the top of this huge mountain above the ruined city of Ephesus. Mary was brought to Ephesus when St. John had to leave Jerusalem. And Mary was brought to Ephesus because, of course, Christ on the cross entrusted Mary to John, entrusted John to Mary and the Apostle John. And so they came to Ephesus together. He built her a beautiful stone home. All the other people lived in caves in the area. It's very high up. It has very beautiful views. The house you see today is not the original one. It was built over the original one. So you have the house. There's a beautiful, more modern chapel. It's where our group had Mass. And in Ephesus, we were reading a letter from St. Paul to the Ephesians and so forth. It was very, very moving.
I understand that you also had Mass, a very special Mass, in a place where Peter had joined Paul. And what was it?
This was awesome. This was in Antioch. Mm. It was a huge cave, and it was in Antioch itself. You're in this big cave, which we had learned was a museum. A museum in the sense of, you know, not display cases or anything else. Simply, you walked into this cave. There is an altar in the back part of the cave, and it's closed off. There's a beautiful facade that has been erected over the cave, three doors, and very, very lovely. But St. Peter and St. Paul did meet with the first Christians, who I think we're looking in the years 50s. It seems like it was somewhere in the 50s, you know, after A.D. And they had what we can say was Mass here. They celebrated the Eucharist. And the amazing thing is our guide arranged, because this is a government-run museum, our guide arranged for us to have a very, very rare, very special permission to say Mass in this cave.
You say that the Christians lived in caves and in these very hard-to-reach areas. What was life like for the Christians back then in Paul's time?
When the Christians were persecuted, which was true up until, so many of them, up until obviously Emperor Constantine in 313 and then for about, 20-some years, they lived in these caves, and the rock was such that it was actually easier. Some of the caves were already, you could walk into them. Others, you'd have to chisel out maybe certain spaces for seats or for tables or whatever. And they also opened up or chiseled out escape routes. And they tried to make it so that, for example, when they were doing their cooking, which would be inside, so if somebody was persecuting them, obviously if you're cooking, there's going to be smoke. It can't go out the front entrance of the cave. They made it so that the smoke might go down another shaft that they had created and be 100 feet away. Mm-hmm. So if somebody was looking for smoke, they'd find the smoke, but they wouldn't find the Christians, or they would get warned enough in time to leave. Oh, my word. We had Mass one day in a cave. I don't know how all of us survived the climb through the snow and the ice up to this cave, but we did. The Lord was truly with us. We had Mass in this cave, and there was this Muslim man who had been contacted by our travel agency, and we were going to celebrate Mass on such and such a day in the morning, and he had like 30 candles all over there. Well, and this was also a church. Let me see. This was 5th or 6th century. And it did not have any images in it. And there was the iconoclast period in which they didn't allow images. And some of the other nearby caves were decorated in the 9th century when images were then allowed. So these had like painted crosses and things on the wall, but not images of people. But this Muslim guide had this little teensy box, probably 2 feet across, or table, 2 feet across, or maybe 4 feet square, that was our altar. I don't know where he got them, but he brought fresh flowers and a little drinking glass. And then he had placed probably 20 or 30 candles throughout the cave. And people were like that everywhere. When I came out of the one with St. Peter where we had Mass and I was privileged beyond telling to read, we came out and there was a guard there. And I just shook his hand and I said, Teşekkür, thank you, in Turkish. And I said, thank you for this very special visit and privilege. And he said, it's a very special place for me too. And he said, it sometimes makes me cry. It is so special. And he said, every morning when I come here, I unlocked the door to open it for visitors. And he said, the first thing I do is pray. And he paused and he said, and I'm a Muslim. I was totally struck by that. To which he added, he said, please tell Pope Benedict to come and visit us and to come and see this cave. I'll tell you what really got to my heart more than anything else. We were in Konya, which if you read in the Bible is Iconium. That was one of two actual buildings where we were inside for Mass. This church of St. Paul in Konya is taken care of by two consecrated women from Trent, Italy, Trento. They are from the Fraternity of the Risen Christ. There are three Catholics in Iconium. I mean, you know, we thought we misheard it, 300, 3,000. Three Catholics, three older senior citizens that come and they pray. There's only Mass if a priest passed through. Like, they do have many pilgrim groups, and that's how they live because, you know, they take up a we took up a collection for them, and that's how they live. So there were some earth-shattering, wonderfully earth-shattering moments of living our faith, of walking in the footsteps of St. Paul, of celebrating Mass as they did, in caves, in grottos, in Antioch of Pisidia, which is a different Antioch. We celebrated Mass outdoors in the half-ruined remnants of a 4th-century Byzantine church built over a temple where St. Paul preached. Because remember, he was, you know, Jewish. And I mean, he preached, his first preachings were in temples. So he was an amazing man. I called him, on a radio show I did for EWTN, I called him an intrepid lover. Because he was so in love with Christ. He was so in love with the message of a man he'd never met. He so believed in who and what Christ was and what he taught. And that he literally went, and one of the expressions we use today is St. Paul's, going to the ends of the earth. And he did that in all kinds of incredible conditions to tell people, listen to me, I've got this wonderful story about an amazing man to tell you.
And a warm thanks there to Joan Lewis, our resident Vatican expert.